Hi, and welcome to the third Filmstock Film Club. Apologies for not being able to get one recorded last month. That was because I was at the BAFTAs on the red carpet doing the live blogging. It's a second year Filmstocker has done it, and so thank you for all that joined in on that. It was great fun. Just to remind you what we do in the Filmstocker Film Club, a bunch of readers get together with myself, and each month one of the members chooses three films. They've got to be connected or related in some way, and we take a period of a week or two to vote on the film we want to see out of those three, and then that the winning film gets watched, and we discuss it in audio over about an hour or so, and that's the show that you hear. This month the choice was 70s conspiracy thrillers. I think this is my last choice before we start going around all the members. And the three films I chose were Parallax View, a film with Warren Beatty, 3 Days of the Condor, that was with Robert Redford. I was going to say De Niro, and I don't know why, because I was thinking of Robert Redford in my head. And the last one is Capricorn 1, which starred James Brolin and Elliot Gould. This is actually the first time that I could have quite happily watched any of the films. I didn't actually have a personal favourite. I've not seen 3 Days of Condor, love Parallax View, and really like Capricorn 1. So it was great when everyone voted and decided that we were going to watch Capricorn 1. For those of you who haven't seen the film, it was made in 1977 by Peter Hyams, and he's got quite a few strong thrillers to his name. He's a pretty damn good director, actually, and when I was originally thinking, and I wasn't specifying the 70s period, I'd chosen a couple of Peter Hyams films. In the end, though, I decided on the 70s period and picked these three. Back to Capricorn 1, though. That film is about... It's a time period in the future when NASA are heading to Mars. They're preparing a mission to go there. They've got the funding. Everything's ready to go. However, they're under real pressure from the government to cut back on their spending, cut back on these missions. They're not seen as a priority in the world anymore. So NASA are fighting to get this mission to work. They're ready to go. It's the day of the mission. They're about to launch. And at the last minute, the director appears and pulls them out of the capsule, pulls the astronauts out of the capsule. It appears that there's a problem with the life support and that they're not going to make it. They know they're not going to make it there. So they pull them out. They fly them off in secrecy to a remote desert location where they discover that there's an elaborate stage set up to simulate the capsule, their time period in traveling towards Mars, and also the surface of Mars itself for the landing and the work they do there. Meanwhile, the empty spaceship flies off into space. So basically they're faking the landing on Mars and the whole journey there and back. But during that, the astronauts begin to realise that their future might be in doubt, and they also start questioning the legitimacy of the cover-up itself, and that's really where the film kicks off from. So let's see what Stephen and Mark thought of it.
I thought it was okay. I watched it in one go. That was a good thing. And
what do you mean you don't watch films in one go?
Not the ones we've been getting. I've watched them twice and then again. And I mean, I've only been able to watch this once. And I would have liked to have seen it twice. But it was okay. It wasn't without its flaws, but I enjoyed it. It kept me going. It was just disappointed in the end.
Yes. Yes, it did, actually. How about you, Mark?
I'm probably the odd one out here because I really, really, really enjoyed it. And Stephen said it's probably because it takes you back to when you were about 12. So I saw it at the pictures in a double bill with Hawk the Slayer.
Oh, what a film.
In about 1982, one Saturday afternoon when my dad was in charge of looking after me, and he dropped me off at the pictures with a mate with 20 quid and said, I'll see you in 4 hours. But yeah, I have really fond memories of it then, and again now after a kind of couple of rewatches, really. There's kind of plot holes that you can drive a car through. Sure, some of the acting isn't fantastic, but I thought as a yarn, it was just absolutely ripping.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. I like Hyams thrillers, actually, because he's done quite a few. But if you just look at the real sort of kind of political thriller, this was really one of his first ones, and he wrote and directed this one. Because he went on to make films like Outland, Star Chamber, which I think is one of the strongest thrillers I remember from that time period. In fact, it was going to be on our list, but it was in the 80s, so I couldn't include it. Damn it!
Yeah, he also made one of my favourite other films as well, which everybody I've met loathes, and that's Running Scared. with Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines.
Well, he did quite a mix as well. He did 2010, he did The Presidio, Narrow Margin. You can kind of see him a theme kind of here. And then he did Time Cop, The Relic, and End of Days, which I really like, by the way. I really like End of Days. But anyway, Capricorn 1. Yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. There are flaws in it. There's a lot of flaws in it, which I'm sure we're going to talk about soon enough. But it's a great idea. It's a great concept. It's got some really well-filmed moments. And I think one of the things we're going to talk about is pacing on the film. But I really enjoyed the pacing of it. I really enjoyed the fact that during the first half, it's really slow to build. And it takes the time to tell the story. And I don't know if this was planned, but at the beginning, there's quite a few big explanation scenes. For instance, when the NASA... I think is he the NASA controller or just the controller of this mission? Dr. James Kellaway, played by Hal Holbrook. He has to sit down the astronauts and explain to them what's happened. Now, rather than some other film just saying, well, everybody knows because they've kind of seen it, so we'll just skip over it. He sits down and gives this inspiring speech of how they were connected and how they were being friends and the emotional side of what this means, and then tells them all about why they've been taken off the spaceship. I quite like that. I quite like the fact it was quite a slow build.
Yeah.
The first half was really good. I mean, and that speech in particular, I think what was good about that speech was he started off how they're all friends, how they all met, but as they get to the end, he becomes the... not necessarily puppet, but the politicians speak of why you've got to do it regardless.
Yeah.
He seems to turn his actual speech halfway through of, this is why I want you to do it because we're friends. This is why you don't want to do it because we can be enemies.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. It was a clever turn, actually. And it really sets the film up to be something from quite early on as well.
Yeah, well, yeah. You do find out they've been friends for years, and then when you think what he does later on in the film, you can understand why he does that twist at the end of his initial speech to go along with the idea.
Yeah, and I thought the kind of reason why they were doing it, the fact that there was a faulty component made on the cheap, I thought, you know, that's kind of plausible to kind of know about. And the thing about the speech that I kind of really liked was he does the speech and then he takes them through and shows them the studio. I think he calls it a moment of truth, doesn't he? He says, you know, this is the moment of truth. Walks them through and you see the hangar with the soundstage in it for the first time. And it's kind of only then that you're like, right, I kind of see what's going to go on here. And I just thought that whole thing played out really well.
I see, you're right, yeah. It's all the way when they... until they walk into that hangar and see the mocked-up spaceship sitting on a faked Martian landscape in the middle of a hangar. It's all the way up into there. It's really good. Because I can remember, actually, he's at the door just about to walk in, and he stumbles because he tries to explain some more and then realises there's no point explaining. I'm just going to walk in. And that's really well done. And actually, I think that leads into the fact that I think the star of this film is Hal Holbrook, the actor who plays that doctor.
Yeah, definitely the best.
Because there's a speech right at the end as well, at the very end, when he's standing up, giving the eulogy to the men. It's before that. It's the speech he's given, the NASA press speech. When he's at NASA, he's got all the press people there. They're all in panic, wondering what's going on. And he gives this emotional speech about, and you can hear his voice just cracking at a couple of moments. He pauses ever so slightly, and he doesn't show too much emotion, but it's you can see it's there. And I think that's a double whammy, because it brings through the fact that he's obviously lying and twisting it, but at the same time, he's given a great performance as the actor.
Yeah, very, very, very much so. And I think it was his performance that really added a bit of authenticity to the movie for me, because of the way that he plays the families off against one another as well. I don't mean against each of the family, but against that situation.
Mm.
Because he approaches one of the wives when they know, I think, that they've died. I'm trying to get the sequence of events here. About going to the funeral and about talking to the press. And I think she sat by a swimming pool. And all that conversation was good because, again, he's playing on that relationship and filling in a bit of that backstory. But it was his performance that kind of really nailed it for me.
Yeah, he gives her a kiss there, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's it.
You know, they've known each other for a long time.
Yeah. So.
And it was also interesting to see her reaction, actually. And who was that again? That was Brenda Vaccaro.
Yeah, she wasn't bad. She actually did a good job as well.
Yeah. Because there was a nice moment there, actually, when he comes into he walks in the back gate of their garden and just unannounced, just walks in. And isn't it the kid that says, "Hey there, Uncle James," or something?
Yeah.
And she doesn't, she kind of reacts, and she already feels there's something wrong with that relationship. Because she doesn't look round at him, but you can see her look to the side or something and then continue what she's doing. It doesn't seem that easy. But yeah, I thought she was pretty good as well. And Karen Black, although she's got a really small role, she plays the female reporter friend of the main character, who's played by Elliot Gould, the main reporter who's investigating this whole thing. She plays a female reporter as a friend of his. And it's another part of how well the dialogue's written, is that Elliot Gould and Karen Black have just this little sort of barb of conversation back and forth, nice little banter with some jokes thrown in there as well. And I just thought that was beautifully scripted. If you remember the first conversation they had.
Yeah, I think that's some of the best comedy I've seen in the movies, kind of full stop, dialogue-based comedy, because he's essentially trying to get into her pants.
Yes.
And she says, you could just ask me if I wanted to jump, instead of kind of going down the, you know, let's have a meaningful life together. And of course, Elliot Gould's response is, well, let's have a jump then. And she goes, I forgot what she said, but it's more like jump on,
yeah,
you know, as in jog on. And that's the end of that dialogue. And I just thought that was fantastic. And I'm guessing that came from the script, but they must have known each other beforehand because it just played out so well.
Yeah.
It made me wonder if they'd worked together before. So, but yeah, I thought that relationship was brilliant.
And the fact that she's such a strong character,
yeah,
as well. For a small character too. In fact, that's interesting. The women in this film are strong characters. I don't know why that surprised me, but for the late 70s, I don't know if that's right. Is that standard? I'm not sure.
But they were there, I suppose, to add meat to the male characters and for us to get to know them. Yet it was because it was the women who ended up liking more than the guys they were trying to add meat to. You know what I mean? Without the conversation with the woman, she was just there so we could end up knowing how, what his name, Elliot Gould's character.
Robert Caulfield.
That's the one.
Yeah, actually, I was just thinking there, the women didn't really play a major part other than to help progress his character's journey, really.
Yeah. That's what I meant badly.
No, not badly at all. I just rephrased what you said and claimed it as my own. But, I mean, while we're talking about acting, I think we have to bring up the Elliot Gould, because I don't know how you guys feel, but I think he's very overrated, and this film really shows it. I mean, his delivery of his lines was just, I don't know. It was like a stand-up comedian trying to act.
My problem wasn't actually with Elliot Gould. I actually think he kind of played his part, not amazingly well, you know, it wasn't Oscar material, but very well. Although, I think whichever movie Elliot Gould's in, you only get Elliot Gould.
Yeah.
So it's a case of, you know, matching him to the right role. But I think in this one, he pulled it off, and he pulled it off fairly well. That's all really I can say on it, because, you know, I do think he was the right person to play the part. I couldn't think of another actor from that time who would have worked as well. and just basically being as stubborn, which is what gets him through the movie. He just will not let go of this idea and kind of carry on chasing the story.
Yeah, but that's what acting's about, isn't it? You should be able to pick from a range of actors who could act that way.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, I know.
The trouble was, his part was, when you think of all the things that were wrong with the film, he was involved in those scenes. Be it when his brakes were done in, the ending, the prison scene, they were all, none of them made sense.
Yeah, but the guy didn't write the movie, he just acted in it. So I can't really see how it's Elliot Gould's fault, to be fair.
Oh, no, I wasn't saying it was Elliot Gould's fault. I was saying you would come away with an impression that he was doing a bad job because of the job he was given. I didn't mind him. I just thought he was in scenes that didn't make sense.
I mean, the kind of actor that I had an issue with was James Brolin. I just thought he was pretty wooden. I thought his delivery was off kilter. There's a couple of scenes when you've got a full body shot of him, and he's literally just stood there with his hands by his side. Especially kind of the first time they touch down and get out of the plane to go and have the big speech before they go into the hangar, the shot and stood in the runway, and he is literally just stood there by the plane. And there's motion in everybody else. I just thought it was a fairly static part for him, so he could have kind of played it a bit better.
Yeah. And even actually, there's a scene where he's where they're filming in this hangar, pretending to be on the ship and talking to their families who are back at NASA. So they think they're in the astronauts are in space flying to Mars, but they're actually in the studio. And he's talking to his wife, and he gets emotional, and there's a tear running down his face. And yeah, I didn't feel any emotion from him at all, really, in that scene. He just looked like he was pouting a bit and looked like a brick.
He was the only one that didn't have his own speaking part in the desert as well, when they all went off. I mean, it was a bit daft.
Oh, yeah.
OJ, he did his talking to himself, so we know what he was thinking. The other guy did his little monologue on the way up the rock, whereas this guy, maybe they thought that's not him speaking. He was the only one without the words.
Actually, did I'm just going to have a check and see what James Brolin did before this. I thought he'd done a lot. And I'm looking through the list. Oh, he did Westworld before this. Yeah, he's done a few things before this that stand out, so you would think he could have acted better in it. But again, yeah, I mean, Mark, you're right. It could have been the script for his part. Who knows? But yeah. Well, I've got to say that O.J. Simpson actually was a bit more surprising. He was better than James Brolin.
Yeah.
Which isn't saying a lot. And talking of ham, Telly Savalas really went for it.
He did.
I think his part was almost... I wonder if much of that was unscripted.
It was like a Saturday Night Live sketch when you first saw him.
Yeah, it was something like that. It was like a guest appearance where he just kind of went wild.
Yeah.
And he did go over the top. And the scenes in the plane... So when the camera's looking face on to the plane, that really does look like a comedy sketch from some show. And I can remember a bit where he's telling him to put his head down, and there's a big joke about it. And the plane is supposed to dip down underneath the camera. But obviously what they do is they tilt the camera up and lift it away. And it just looks like they're doing that.
Yeah.
And And there's a couple of scenes actually like that broke the movie. Stephen, you were going to say something about the car chase, I think really got you going, didn't it?
Yeah, well, the FBI or whoever were in on the conspiracy decided to kill Elliot Gould's character, and they did it by cutting his brakes. But all that seemed to do was make him go faster and faster.
Did they cut his brakes, though?
Well, his brakes didn't work.
Yeah. And then the ignition didn't work, and then the accelerator didn't work, and the handbrake didn't work.
No, I just think he was going fast, and then the camera just went silly.
Oh, I know, I agree with that, but your point was that they'd earlier, before this conversation, I should have let you say it actually, so you could have fallen in the trap and I could have leapt on you. you'd said, oh, he wouldn't go faster if they just cut his brakes. But you were assuming they cut his brakes, but you saw moments where he was trying to turn off the car and the ignition came away in his hand and the handbrake didn't work and the accelerator wasn't working, nothing was working.
But I still don't think the car would have gone faster. I think he was doing 120 at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah, turning around on a dime.
Well, yeah, and the car...
He comes to a crossroads, he drives around in a circle, and then carries on a straight line again.
That whole scene did bother me, because I thought, well, why doesn't he just keep going in circles, or why doesn't he start sideswiping cars and things, or scrape along that wall when he's driving down little alleys and things? You know, there's loads of things that would go through my mind. The least of all is going through roadworks and then leaping off a bridge.
Yeah. But I was surprised. I did think he was going to land on the other side. I was quite pleased that he actually took a dive into the water.
Yes.
I mean, I knew he was going to get out, but he was still pleasing.
It was like a Benny Hill sketch, I thought, that whole car chase. But I think that's one of the things when the film was made, they couldn't do very well. They couldn't kind of speed things up effectively. And, you know, if you look at loads of films at that time, I'm sure that it would have a similarly rubbish special effect in for a car chase.
Absolutely. And I think, so on that note, I think it's very surprising how well they did with the air chase in comparison.
Yeah.
Because there's not, there's no speeding up I saw there. And yet they were doing some incredibly low flying. And basically, just to explain that, there's two little attack helicopters chasing a biplane.
That sounds daft when you say it, but it doesn't look daft.
No, it doesn't, because the biplane is, in fact, a crop duster, so that explains why it's a biplane. It sounds even worse if I say Telly Savalas is flying it. it's an episode of the A-Team or something. And the plane's doing some amazing drops just over the edge of cliffs with the helicopters following them. And some of that was amazing. Although I do think it went on a bit much.
Yeah, I mean, it really did look good, but there was a couple of moments where when they went upside down and Brolin's character's holding onto a piece of wire and he never moves, he stays constantly stuck to the wing. I mean, I thought that...
That's his acting. No, you're right. That is kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Apart from that bit, I mean, it was a good chase. I mean, I thought the way he shook off the helicopters was a bit daft as well.
Yeah. Well, you can see it coming, and it's...
And these are the things, these are the little... I mean, that's why this film was... I mean, it was a great film, but you felt disappointed at the end. I think it was because of these flaws.
Yeah.
Edit that word great, I mean, good.
Too late.
The thing I liked about the air chase was it just, at the end of the film, it kind of picked the pace back up again, and it was kind of really nippy, really impressive. The bits I didn't like were the dialogue bits between Savalas and Gould.
Yeah.
When they were filmed from the front on, because it was obviously just sat on top of a gimbal somewhere, and there was a stagehand or whatever rocking it around a little bit. And I just think they broke up the pacing of that chase. A bit too much for me.
And that's something that... because between Gould and Karen Black, the comedy there was in character, felt real.
Mm.
And but between Gould and Savalas, it was just comedy. And right then, what we needed was the tense thriller, tense chase thriller. And that wasn't given us. It was just like, what the hell? And then immediately back to the tense chase, and you're going, right, hold on, I've got to try and catch up with this again. Yeah, it didn't work at all, I thought. But you know what's something I just thought about as well was, I'd been watching, there's a similar thought to this. I'd caught E.T. earlier today. I didn't catch E.T. It sounds like a bad disease. I saw some of E.T. on the telly.
Mm.
And I was just thinking again, you know, how well that's filmed from shot to shot, and the fact that they don't show any adults in it, and then all the adults are just showing body parts probably from behind, or you see the hand coming in, or just the side of their face and not much more. And that thing with the guy with the keys, and the first time you see him, you hear the keys, but you don't see them until the he's actually walking through the forest going after them. And I just thought, that's really cool. He's given a personality and a reference to objects and keeping the adults off frame. And then I saw the helicopters in this, and it gave me a similar feeling, because they're flying the helicopters, and you notice they had loads of scenes where the helicopters turned to each other.
Yeah.
And they were given a personality. And it was kind of odd. At the same time, I thought, that's quite clever, because now they are the bad objects. And then when the pilots got out, they kept their full face masks on, and they were never given personalities.
I think I was going to mention my favourite scenes later, but one of them was, you know, when he's inside the petrol station thing.
Yeah.
And the way the two helicopters just hover in front of the window, it's as though, like you said, like the helicopters themselves are alive and looking in for
you.
Yeah. I did have that feeling.
And all the scenes were like that. Shot. Even when Sam Waterston, the one that's got the joke, he's climbing up the cliff, and he's the jokey character, who's actually one of the ones that made me laugh through this, intentionally, that is. He's climbing up the cliff, and he gets to the top, and the camera just turns round, and the helicopter's there. And again, you don't see anyone. You just see the feet of the helicopter. And then it pulls back to just show the helicopter. So I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, the one where Brolin, his character, the first time we see the helicopters, there's just two coming straight towards you.
Yeah.
And then they disappear. I quite like that. And the bit where he then hides, comes out of the sand. That was probably the best bit of acting he did. And all he had to tell him was lie down under this sand and then sit up when helicopters had gone. It was a really good scene.
Yeah, it was actually.
The thing, I'm going to kind of say something in it. It gnawed at me a little bit with the plane sequence. And Stephen and I were having a chat kind of before you came online, Richard. And you mentioned about just the passing of time in the movie. And the bit that kind of really gnawed at me was the fact that the helicopter chase was intercut with them getting to the funeral as if it was in real time. And this funeral must have lasted a good 4 or 5 hours for these three astronauts. And it just bugged me throughout the last kind of, you know, 15, 20 minutes that how quickly can Elliot Gould drive his car, obviously very fast, to get to the funeral on time. Maybe somebody had cut his brakes again.
Yeah, he's had practice.
Yeah, exactly. But how far away was the actual desert from LA, which I guess is kind of where they were, and that just annoyed me a little bit.
I think the timing throughout the last hour was off. I mean, in that time, he'd been arrested, he'd been let go, he'd been shot at, his mate had been kidnapped, got rid of, all sorted out. Yeah, they were only in the desert for an hour and a half, by the looks of it. I mean, it looked like they'd been walking for days, and then one of them would shoot a flare off, and it'd be like 20 yards away. I mean, they didn't go far yet in a long time, or so it seemed. There was just no sense of time in that last hour.
There is a nighttime shot in the desert, though, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a nighttime, and there's also a sunset stroke rise. Oops.
1 second. Oh, it might not be for me. See, nobody phones in the morning.
You done?
Yeah, I believe I am.
All right. Where were we?
Sunset and sunrise.
About. So there is a sunset and a sunrise scene, or sunrise. I don't know which, but
yeah, it goes dark.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, the day after, he shoots a flare, and they've hardly moved. Now, unless we're to believe they've walked around in circles, but it just didn't add up. And I think having a night as well.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think my problem with the timing would be the first time we see them in the desert. So when they set out to the next moment we see them, it suddenly seems like maybe a week's passed because they're suffering from dehydration already. Yeah. You know, it's that's a bit quick. I don't think anything in the desert is badly timed. But when you get to the... What Mark was saying, when you get to the bits that intercut between the chase and the funeral, that's that's badly done as well. And I don't know if it's timing so much as it just shouldn't have been cut together. I don't know. It just didn't work at all for me. It didn't give me any...
I just think I'll have to go. Just 1 second.
Yeah, so that I think the last section with it isn't so much due to the timing, although the timing is off. I think the problem with that is that it just didn't feel right cutting between the two. I don't know, it just... That whole ending piece, it seemed rushed, actually.
Yeah, the last shot, I wanted to see him and his missus, not him and the reporter. And the last shot was those two that had... I mean, it slowed it down as well.
That was painful.
And then it just stopped on them two. And it should have been him and his wife.
Well, I don't know. So I know what that shot was doing. And I know it's showing, you know, both of them have won what they wanted. Or this is the start of both of them getting what they wanted. But I would have liked to have seen more him getting to the crowd... And some of the shock, some of the effect on the key people there, like the president and the doctor, the guy in charge of the program again that covered it all up, and the politician who was behind him. I wanted to see something like that. He could have gone to his wife, but I've liked to have seen their shock face to realise that their careers were over or whatever.
Yeah, and answers to what happened to the other two as well. You never get to find out. I mean, I read somewhere that they'd died. I don't think they had. But it would have been nice to have seen them.
I think they would have been shot.
I think they would have been wiped out, yeah. I think
they'd have waited until they caught the third. I don't think they'd have risked shooting two when one was still out there.
You know, I've just thought is that I presume... well, obviously nobody's going to listen to this if they haven't seen the film, are they? Because I just thought, we haven't actually explained the second half of the film, we've just talked about it. But then everyone's going to have watched it to even make any sense of this. So I've answered my own question, thank you.
I'm going to kind of jibby with my bit on that end bit. I think where it finished was the right place to finish, although how it finished was wrong. And I think the only reason to show the reaction when they kind of hit that crowd was to figure out who knew and who didn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, how far did it go? And it comes, you know, that's one of the whole things of the film, isn't it? Is it just the one guy that knows, or is there, you know, a group of people who've kept this secret?
But you know what? I kind of like that because if I think about the Star Chamber, which I really like, and that's a story about judges who get together by themselves and hire a hitman and have their own meeting. So let me go back and try that again. When one of the judges has to find somebody not guilty, but obviously realizes they are guilty of something pretty serious, they get together in the Star Chamber with other judges. They have their own little trial. They find them guilty, hire a hitman, and get him shot. Michael Douglas is a new judge that has been recruited in here. Now, the rest of the Star Chamber are all faceless. I can't remember, you might get to see them later on, but for the most part, they're faceless. And I kind of like that. I kind of like the way that is. And you don't know if there's anything more to it than just these people that you've seen. I kind of like that uncertainty, because it keeps the conspiracy going after the film.
Yeah, but with a conspiracy, you want to see the conspirators. Otherwise, it would be just one guy telling a few guys in helicopters what to do. You don't know whether I think it was the governor. Was he on, you know, how far in was he?
I think it was obvious that he was.
I didn't think he was at all, though.
No, I don't. He was wanting the president, though. He wasn't the president there for something to go wrong.
I got the feeling that it was the president that was backing away from everything, and it was the governor who always had this shadowy sort of army guy with him, and they were always looking at each other. So when the capsule burned up on re-entry, those two looked really concerned at each other. He got the phone call. Oh, I can't remember now, I'm mixing it up. Maybe he didn't get the phone call. But those two looked at each other, and they looked seriously worried at that point. I thought that just clinched it for me. Those two are behind it.
Right, okay.
But are you on about the governor with some army guys when he was getting the call from the doctor?
I think so, yeah. I think there's two scenes, actually. One's the congratulation. Oh, I can't remember now, actually. I can't remember which scene it is, but I do remember the burn-up, and then the governor and the army guy look at each other. They look really concerned, and the governor stamps out a cigar in disgust, and then it cuts away.
See, I got none of the politicians being in on it. There was definitely the guy that covered up. You know when the console operator spotted the first floor?
Yeah.
With the video feed not matching the time of the where the spaceship was.
Yes.
I mean, the first guy he told, he obviously had an idea as well. He was in on it. But I never got a sense that any politician was.
Well, it was quite subtle, but I came away with that idea. Maybe I just read too much into these things.
It's never been said before.
Maybe you don't read enough into them.
No, well, that's been said before, yeah.
I do agree. It didn't expose a great deep conspiracy.
Yeah, the conspiracy was there because they were kidnapping guys and making them disappear. They were changing telephone directories. They were updating mail for a year.
Well, there you go. The guy in charge of NASA is not going to be able to do that, is he?
Yeah, so there was a conspiracy. You just never... I mean, but these things never worked. I mean, they arrested the guy. They've been told to arrest it. And then they let him out on bail within, it seemed like, an hour.
Yeah, that's another point. So they go...
That was just daft, yeah.
They follow him into the desert to an abandoned sort of old pleasure... I don't know what you call it. Sort of a show area for cowboys and Indians.
Was it a film set?
I thought it was a place where they could go and visit, and they just happened to be filming there.
Ah, maybe. That sounds more like it, actually, yeah.
That's like, I can't even think what you would call it. No.
A Wild West town.
Yes, a fake one.
Yeah.
For tourists. Well, it wasn't a film set. They happened to be filming something when they went there.
Yeah, I think it's like a tourist attraction.
Yes.
Because of how it looked, was used as a film set when they were on holiday there.
There you go.
There we go.
Anyway, he goes there. It's totally abandoned. Somebody shoots at him. And there's two shots that hit about 5 feet away on a roof. He lies down on the ground. And the car drives away. You think, wait a minute. Did this professional assassin follow him with only two shots? Or was that just to scare him? And I'm thinking at that point, they've already... they're already talking about murdering astronauts. They possibly murdered one of the NASA controllers and destroyed his life, hidden it away forever. And they're just going to fire warning shots at him after the fourth attempt to warn him away? I find that a bit odd.
Yeah, I mean, they really tried with his brakes and all the other electrical stuff they changed. They shot at him and then give up. They plant drugs on him and arrest him and then let him go. It was a conspiracy to get caught. That was the conspiracy. Somebody let him go.
And you know what? We're laughing at this, but you know, that's the kind of stupid, dumbass thing that governments would do. Because they just wouldn't be able to do it right. It would all be compartmentalized and departments wouldn't talk to the other departments. Memos would get lost. Somebody would write, only take two bullets to shoot the guy. You know,
they managed it with a moon landing.
I was going to say, if they can pull off a moon landing or a manned trip to Mars. And
Mars, yes, this is Mars.
Then I'm pretty certain they could actually pull it off. I think they were just kind of plot holes in the script, which is one of the things I kind of mentioned. You could drive a truck through those, they were that big.
Yeah.
You know, the one that really annoyed me was the two shots one, because it just made absolutely no sense. But there you go, you know, it's in lots of films, there's kind of plot holes and you go past them. I think it's called Willing Suspension of Disbelief, isn't it?
Yes, it's called Mistakes That the Writers Made and the Directors Didn't Fix.
Yeah, there you go. If you want to go down that path. Maybe they didn't have Telly Savalas there writing his own script. Maybe that was the problem. But I was kind of willing to let that pass and kind of get past that. But it did bug me somewhat.
And I think that those mistakes were not in the core of the film. So the whole conspiracy idea in the film inside was fantastic.
Yeah.
Although, do you think that he just took that idea from the conspiracy theorists who believe that they faked the moon landings?
I think that's where the idea came from. When the script was being written, but I think the way it was turned into this flick was, I think it was really well done, because it was like a step further on. It was about the Mars missions, and you know, as I've said before, the thing that I really liked about it was it was rooted in realism, in the fact, you know, the part goes to the lowest bidder, and the lowest bidder, you know, messed up and created a life support system that wasn't going to work, and that was the thing that caused this chain of events to happen, and that's what I really, really dug about the film.
I guess actually, I was just thinking about it. It's also good that the capsule burned up on re-entry, and nothing happened away.
Yeah,
I kind of like that as well, that it lasted so long.
Yeah, that was a great. I mean, I had no idea what the film was about, and I remember, because I never knew that was coming. I thought it was going to be a conspiracy throughout that they'd been and come back.
Mm.
I mean, that was a really good twist for somebody that didn't have an idea what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you will think it's either they're never going to come back, or they'll stay there, they'll come back, and they'll all be happy. And I thought that's how it was going to go.
They'll all be happy in the end.
We'll be happy, multimillionaires, everything's great, yeah.
No, I don't think that was going to happen. But it's interesting. So I think what we're basically seeing is it's a really good film, a really good concept, some bad acting, some bad dialogue, which mostly happens off the core plot, and some bad effects, which were really put down to the time it was filmed in. And that sounds to me like it's prime for a remake.
Funnily enough.
Yeah,
exactly.
It is down for a remake, isn't it? Capricorn 2.
Capricorn 2?
Is on the cards, yeah. I don't know where I've read that. Might have been on IMDb or Wiki, but apparently, yeah, somebody's bought the rights and it's going to be remade as Capricorn 2.
Well, there's a Capricorn 1 down for 2010.
Yeah, I haven't got IMDb Pro, though, and I thought you'd probably have, Richard, so I don't know what the production details are on it.
I haven't, actually. I haven't done that. But I'm looking back because I remember writing about this in 2008. Just counting this in my hand. January, February, March, April, May, June.
Yeah.
It all depends what they class by as in development. I mean, is somebody chatting about it like we are, and is it suddenly in development, or is the people putting up money hiring actors?
Hyams is producing the remake.
Yeah, and there's I'm on darkhorizons.com, and there's two writers attached. One of them is Peter Buckman, who did Jurassic Park 3, and the second one is David Dobkin, who did Shanghai Nights Award. And it's going to be called Capricorn 2 for Regency Films. And it then says shooting is slated to start later this year. But this was written on February the 9th, 2007.
Yeah, well, I've got an entry from 2008, July, and it's what we've got then is that Hyams is producing, David Dobkin is directing, no writers attached.
Right.
So, you know, it's like a lot of these things are rumours that are just made up, really. But I think that could work. That really could work, especially as there is discussion about going to Mars.
Yeah.
And they certainly need money for more pressing things as well. So there's a reason for the president to be sceptical and the NASA men to want to go ahead with it and make it look like it worked.
And there's enough scope within the film, I think, and that story to kind of play it out slightly differently. And one of the things which I think Stephen said was about, you know, them going and then making it back and then, you know, what happens in the 20 years after that. And I think that would play out pretty well if you saw, you know, relationships change and stuff, and then one of them cracks and kind of admits what's gone on.
Ah, you mean for them to come back and for it still to be a secret?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ah.
So, you know, I think the scope there in the idea for a remake to happen.
Yeah.
So.
I think that would make a really good one. And actually, while I was looking at that, I also noticed that Peter Hyams is having a crack at another one of his films. He said, trying to go back to the correct page. So he also, let me just check if he wrote it. He did. He wrote and directed Outland, which I think is a cracking film.
That the Sean Connery one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a remake, it's basically a remake of High Noon in Space, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
He's remaking that as well, it seems.
Blimey.
Because that appears to be in development, but I've got no details of exactly what's going on. In fact,
yeah.
I should just do a quick search and see if I've written about it before. Oh, here we go. 2009, January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August. August! I can't do that. I can't look at a number and pick a month for it. I've got to count it. I don't know why that is. Anyway, Outland to be remade. The writer Chad St. John and the director Michael Davis. I don't know what they've done before. If anybody wants to look it up. Oh, Michael Davis, the writer and director of Shoot 'Em Up.
That was the Clive Owen.
Monica Bellucci, yeah.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed that.
He says, we're staying true to the thematic heart of Outland while expanding the space frontier concept. Doesn't say much more about it.
They always sound good.
The one-liners, yeah.
Yeah, Life Force sounded good.
It was, in its own little way. All right, well, that's. I think we've covered it. Does anybody have anything else they want to say about Capricorn 1?
Yeah, I kind of wish that it had been made, you know, 10 or 15 years later, just so they could get a joke in there of when the plane crashes and they crack open the survival kit, that somebody could actually hand OJ the knife. Because I think that would have been really funny. But apart from that, I'm done.
Yeah, and he was wearing gloves that were too tight for him at the time.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I did like the fact that there were nicely three canisters of water in that container. How did they know? That's fantastic.
Which they must have drank quickly when you think how chapped their lips were 6 hours into the war. They must have said, here's a bottle of water. They just drank it in one go.
Yeah, and the eating of the snakes scene has got to go in there, I think, because it's kind of one we've not talked about, but I quite enjoyed that.
I think you want to just tuck in.
Yeah. Actually, that you were joking earlier about the best acting scene was him coming out of the sand, but come on, the best acting scene was eating that snake.
I thought you were going to say the snake. Yes.
Wow, you saw a different film to me. Deep throat one.
No.
Now my mind's just thinking of porn titles for Capricorn 1.
Capricorn Bomb.
The obvious one, yeah.
Capricorn 1.
Caprihorn 1.
Oh, I like it.
That's good. Yeah, very good.
Yes. I think we should start producing that immediately. Anyway, I think we can safely call that a wrap on reviewing Capricorn 1. It's not really reviews it, we just rip it apart.
Yeah. Pretty much.
So it just left to say thank you to Mark
for joining. Anytime. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it as usual.
And if you want to give your site a plug.
Yeah, of course. It's markbuckleyphotography.co.uk.
Did you
Available
get that?
For almost, yeah. I'm available for weddings, christenings and bar mitzvahs.
And you'll do the photography as well.
Absolutely.
And thank you, Steve N.
Welcome. It's good.
And you've got no website to promote.
No, I've got one now.
Oh, have you?
Hung Like a Horse.
Have you checked if that exists before you said it?
No, it's got to.
Are we all frantically typing it in? Oh, my Lord. Off you. Oh, my Lord.
You might want to change that, Stephen. Should we do that again?
Luckily, it was a banana. We're all right.
I don't know. I just flicked it off quickly.
No, it wasn't as bad as you'd have thought.
I didn't.
I'm sure if you look further down, it's nasty.
Did I just say I flicked it off quickly?
Is that your picture at the top, Stephen?
Yeah, thank you. It was very good. I don't have a website.
Thank the Lord. I can edit that one out now. And, of course, myself, Richard Brunton of filmstalker.co.uk. And you can also find us on Facebook if you go to www.facebook.com/filmstalkers. And all over the place on Twitter, on Plurk, and whatever you want to do, just search for Filmstalker, you'll find me. So thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time for the next secret film. Cheers.
We are T-minus 18 seconds from liftoff. We're T-minus 15 seconds.
Would you and your men please follow me?
Hey, what the hell is this?
This is an emergency. Please follow me, now!
T-minus 10 seconds, 9, 8, we have ignition, 6, 5, we have outboard engines, 3, we have inboard engines, 1, 0, we have a launch commit, we have a liftoff at 35 minutes after the hour.
Every split second of this historic flight, every intimate detail, every heartbeat was monitored by Mission Control in Houston.
This is Capricorn 1. We have landed.
As millions all over the world watched and listened, the President of the United States spoke to the astronauts across the vastness of space.
To the men of Capricorn 1, I bring you greetings from your fellow Americans.
There's only one small catch. It never happened. It's all a lie. A fantastic $30 billion hoax.
Something's wrong, and I don't know what it is.
Dig deep enough, you might uncover the truth.
Those signals couldn't have come from 300 miles.
But the odds are, you'll never live to tell it.
Freeze!
I'm not moving an inch.
They're on the plane together! There's a device, it's on the plane. There's some people, if I don't give them the all clear signal, they'll explode it.
Something's wrong, something big. They know I'm onto it and they try to kill me.
Who's they?
I can't tell you.
We are dead.
You tell me you're in trouble, you're out on bail, you just got fired, I tell you I'll be right over.
My head hurts.
You look awful.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
These people are capable of anything.
You sound so close. It's hard to believe you really are that far away in space.
It's hard for me to believe it, too.
You're up to something. You want my help.
It's gotten out of control. It's too big.
Capricorn 1, this is Houston. Capricorn 1, we show red on the heat shield. Capricorn 1, this is Houston. We show red on the heat shield. Do you read?
Pull that lever down by your feet when I tell you, sonny.
Capricorn 1, the mission that never got off the ground.